You're listening to the Clear Creek Resources Podcast from Clear Creek Community Church, located in the Bay Area of Houston.
Welcome, everyone, to Clear Creek Resources Podcast. I'm Rachel Chester.
And I'm Ryan Leighton.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Our hope is that this podcast helps us to better connect with the people of Clear Creek community and that we can continue our conversation beyond just our weekly worship services. So, Ryan, today we're talking about music. What's your favorite concert you've ever been to?
I would say Ryan Adams at Stubbs in Austin, and I don't even know the year. It was
doesn't matter. You're in Austin.
It was awesome. I was in Austin, and it was like the outdoor, you know, amphitheater type of thing in the back, and it was Ryan Adams, and it was awesome. And he was angry with the crowd as always, and it was awesome.
That is awesome. I really cannot believe how talented and amazing our arts team is. They always blow me away, and especially now, whenever that is one of the primary ways we're connecting with people, they've been amazing. And I think you recently sat down with two of them from Clear Creek, Eric Harding and Tanner Smith, who are just so talented. What was that conversation like?
Yeah, so I mean, they are uber talented. They really just represent a very uber talented arts team in general. And so being able to sit down with both those guys to hear about their gifting, their craft, how they write songs, the thought that goes into it, just their joy of being able to use the gifts that God has given them to play music personally on their own as they worship God through that gifting, but then also to lead the church in that. So it's a really encouraging conversation, and hopefully those who are listening get a lot out of it as well.
And we're all going to know how to write music afterwards.
Yes, hopefully.
That sounds really great. I can't wait.
All right, Eric and Tanner, thanks for being on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Or Eric, I should say, welcome back to the podcast. You were on a few months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about who's in the Bible.
Oh, that's right. I was kind of like, what was I on a podcast for?
Yeah. It was a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, man. That thing's been moving along.
All right. So you've been around for a while. You've been on staff. You've led worship at West Campus for how many years?
At the end of this month, it'll be 7 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Feels like I just got here.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good 7 years.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people at this point know who you are, even if they don't go to West Campus. I mean, you're around. We do a lot of things together as one church. And so a lot of people know who you are. Tanner, you're a little bit newer on staff.
Yeah, I mean, brand new.
You're not that new. I mean, at least to us. I mean, we've seen you a lot lately.
Yeah.
But you're new enough that I still get people asking me, like, Who is that guy? Like, he's good, but who is that guy?
So caveat, really, I do like him, but yeah. Who is that guy?
So that's my first question to you is, who are you? Tell us about your family, where you're from, all that stuff.
Questions I ask myself.
Yeah.
No, thank you. My name is Tanner Smith, and I've been on staff, I think it's May now, so maybe it's been 7 months or something like that. I think it's around crazy. October, November.
Yeah.
And I'm originally from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but I only lived there until I was 5 years old, so don't hold that against me. Traveled all over the country. Moved here when I was 17, so practically a Houstonian. And I'm married to Aaron Smith, and we've been married, actually just celebrated our 8-year anniversary. We have a 5-year-old son named Maverick, a 2-year-old daughter named Porter, and we have a 5-month-old daughter named Elliot. And we live in Friendswood and lived there for a while. And honestly, incredibly blessed to be a part of the team of Clear Creek Community Church. It has been nothing but a delight for the last however long it's been, 7 months or so. So
awesome. So what's your role on the arts team?
I'm support. I'm a relief pitcher, basically. I travel to the different campuses and give all the other worship leaders just a day to come and participate instead of a day to be on the stage in the lights. Just give them a day to be a normal person and worship. And I get that as well. They give me that freedom too, but that's kind of my role. And honestly, it's been exciting just to get to meet all the different volunteers, see the culture of each campus, and it's been a really cool experience thus far.
Yeah, you get a perspective that most are our staff and most people who are attending Clear Creek don't get, just to be able to bounce around and to see the different campuses and worship together. And
I can truly say that it is one church, many locations. That is not just something that we say. That is a felt reality for me after doing what I've been doing.
And so what's your background in music? Any like formal training, or is it a lot of just self-taught? I mean, you are a phenomenal musician, phenomenal singer.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Really yeah.
No formal training. Now, my dad gave me my first guitar when I was 6 years old. Same year he gave me a BB gun.
Yes.
I went the music direction.
That could have gone either way.
Yeah, it could have gone, you know. As I grew up, my dad plays guitar, has played for years, and so he taught me a lot of stuff. That's how most Saturday mornings went, was just learning guitar riffs and blues and classic rock. And as time went on, I got into songwriting. I loved songs. I loved listening to them. I loved kind of hearing the patterns and progressions in them and sort of picking them apart. And so I kind of fell in love with that and did that all throughout my teen years and got involved leading worship as we moved and traveled around a lot. That was kind of the experience. It was all a lot of time with a guitar in my room or whatever, just kind of figuring it out and then playing with people when I could and stuff like that. So fortunate for, really grateful for years to be able to play with others and be a part of different teams and stuff like that, which has been super helpful in my progression as a musician, because you can't really progress that much alone. You know, you need other people who are better than you. And so thankful to have gotten to do that with a lot of other people.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys, along with the arts team, you recently released a new song called Fighting Words. And that's one of the things I want to talk about today. It's just how you write songs. I think a lot of people, I know at least for me, I'm really interested in the process for that. You guys have written a lot of songs just personally, but then as the arts team, you guys have written a number of songs and put out a number of different albums. And so what's the story behind that song, Fighting Words?
I think for us as a team, usually a song kind of originates with an idea or like at least a theme from one person and then builds from there. I think that we as a team have hit this new place where what we collectively produce is better than what we produce separately. I don't think that was always the case. I think it's something that's kind of built, and the basis of that is really trust and people understanding their strengths. We tried to do that a few years back, and I think that we were watering down each other's ideas rather than helping each other's ideas, you know? And I think that it really is just, it's mechanics and creativity and all those things, giving each other the right space and all that kind of stuff. And so, that has really changed what we've been able to do. I think that the last album Ties that we did, Fighting Words that came out, those are a reflection of our team clicking on all cylinders. And I think, you know, and a lot of that even happened before Tanner got here. I think when you add someone like him into the mix, there's just a lot of strengths that come to the table. And so that's really cool. Fighting Words, I had read something. I don't remember what I even read. I think I just saw the words Fighting Words somewhere. And it got me thinking about how we as a church, we put so much emphasis on the gospel, on the Word of God. And so how much we have to know the Word of God, we have to be inundated with that as a part of like our discipline. And so there's not a lot of like worship songs about the Bible, really. And so that was the initial jumping off point of like, let's have a song that could become a part of who we are and maybe what we sing. That is really a chance to worship God's revealed word, you know? And so rather than, you know, cause we want to sing a lot of songs that are gospel centered. And so sometimes we tell the story of the gospel, and other times we sing about God's love or God's provision, or we sing about God's, you know, faithfulness. And so this was a chance to fill the slot of singing about God's word, you know, so the promises that we find in God's word and what that can really do and what that can be. And so initially I think I kind of dorked out, and that's what was funny. We were talking earlier about voice memos. my original voice memo for this song. It's me on a piano. I think I sent this to you and JJ originally. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, dude, it would be terribly embarrassing to like release each step of a song, but it would be really enlightening because you get to see what it really means for as a team to work on something together. Because it was just like, it was this real kind of dreary sounding piano. And I was singing, I'd sing like the verses, and then I had this one chorus, and I hated the chorus. You know, I was like, man, I just don't feel like this has the lift. And then we got together around the piano one day. On Wednesday mornings, we have what's called dark arts. And that sounds weird, but really it's kind of dark as in don't ask us to do anything. And
y'all have been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, it was here before I was here.
Yeah.
I don't think we didn't live into it for a long time. And now, like, man, we've been living into this. Like, Wednesday mornings, like, we're unavailable. And so, of course, we're recording this on a Wednesday morning, but it's quarantine time, so it's different. but we got together and, you know, it was able to kind of like, you know, I kind of shared like, okay, here's my thought, my vision for this. And you get other musical minds around it going, cool, cool, cool. Okay, but what if... And like we've allowed ourselves to say what if pretty well. You have to trust somebody for them to say what if to your creative thing. Hmm. I think that you know we've learned to do that pretty well. And I think that maybe we also give license to maybe whoever's original idea was, they kind of have a little bit of veto power sometimes, but not really. I think we pretty much live open-handed about a song. And so Fighting Words then became, it would not have landed if it had just been me, the way that I'd started it, because the other minds came into it. And even like just little lines and things like that, the melodies that make more sense. And, you know, people think about things differently. And so that's where we kind of landed where we are on that song now.
To me, what was cool about the process of that song is, you know, Eric like sent out this voice memo. And I think I even remember like where I was listening to it, because I like pulled out my phone. I'm like, oh, cool, Eric sent a song. Listen to him, like, yeah, I don't know about this. I wasn't sure. Even like, man, I think I like waited a while to respond to see what JJ
That's
said.
How you definitely know too. When they wait a while to respond, you're like, ah, crap.
And I think JJ like wrote something like, yeah, I like this, or this has good, you know, I can see it going somewhere or something. I was like, all right, yeah, cool. This sounds great. And then we, you know, we get together though, and the beauty of that song is that it had such a strong foundation, such a strong concept as a foundation.
Yeah.
That, you know, JJ saw into that and said, mm-hmm. well, let's bring that out. Like, let's, you know, mold and shape this into something that illuminates that concept of the scriptures are our fighting words. And so I'm thankful for that vision. You know, that's like good to be able to have that kind of insight. So we got around it with a piano. I think it was mm-hmm. A few of us just sat down with it and just said, all right, let's kind of pick it apart. And the verses stayed pretty similar lyrically. They changed a little bit melodically. I think the chorus pretty much changed completely.
Completely. And just like, you know, so you'll take what was like the founding, the chorus is kind of usually like, and this is what we're saying. And, but again, we kept the idea that we hang on the promises of God, because those are what those were our weapon against the darkness. But, you know, rewrote the melody, rewrote the words.
So
you know,
we spent like an entire morning reworking this song. And, you know, I've heard the analogy of songwriting where you have like an oyster, you know, it gets an irritant in there, like a grain of sand, and kind of works at it, and eventually, hopefully, release a pearl. And that didn't happen for a long time. We like worked on it all morning, and then we're like, all right, well, we'll come back to this or whatever. We came back to it a few times. We even had like entire brainstorming sessions on like the first line of the chorus took us, it was taking us months. We're like, this song is done except for like the opening line of the chorus. What is it going to be?
It literally got shelved.
Yeah.
Like we literally just shelved it. I was like, I don't care anymore. I that's the other thing too, is like, I want to turn a page. I'm on to the next thing. But which is great, because again, that's not my strength. I got it this far. We collectively will now land this in the future. And I'm all like, and I don't care anymore. Here we go. I'm on to the next song, you know. But it's like, I'm already thinking about the music video. You know, I'm on to something else. Like I'm way more
the brainstorm guy.
I'm thinking somewhere else. You know, and so but that's someone else's strength. So it's helpful. That's how we actually get things actually finished. Is that we work together.
So then fast forward, coronavirus hits, and we're all like, kind of, what is going on right now? We did feel that there was a certain need for us to like sort of be creative in this moment. I think the burden that you wear as an artist and as a creative, as a writer, is like when there's a moment, or at least I do, when there's a moment of something unprecedented, or there's a moment of despair, or there's a moment of something that a lot of people feel, a large group of people feel, you almost feel a responsibility to create something that they can use as a vehicle, you know, to get from one place to the next.
Yeah, and that's so awesome.
For us, we're like, oh, wait a second. Remember the song that we shelved? Like, this song needs to be now. It was born for this moment. We couldn't finish it until now. And so we wrapped it up, finished up the first line. It kind of came to us, and then we're like, this is the song for the present time, for people to sing in the midst of chaos.
And then every meeting, I'm like, we got to land that this week. Hey, that has got to get
record
done.
It. Got to record it.
Got to record
right
it right now.
Yeah.
And then, but even then, like I've learned to kind of go, God is in charge of the timing on these things. And so when it gets done, we be diligent about creating. And when it gets time for that, it will come. You know, and that's, you mentioned like the whole, when something happens, it's unprecedented. You feel like this responsibility. I think I hold that in two hands. Like one, I'm like, yes, I feel that. I'm like, oh, I want to create something that's going to just give people words that don't know how to do that. You know, maybe that's our role as an artist. You give people that creative outlet to sing or do or feel or watch that they don't have capacity to make because they live in this other lane of this other world. They're never going to do that, but they will be served by that.
Yeah, when they hear that, they're like, yes, like that's how I feel, or yes.
Yeah.
That, it puts words to something that they can't really put words in.
Exactly.
I'm one of those people. You know, like, I live in a different lane that I'm like, yes, thank you for telling me or helping me see what I already was feeling.
But Ryan, you're a rapper though too, right?
Aspiring.
On the side.
Well, no, I'm really not.
I need you on a track,
no,
man.
No,
But that's the thing. It's like, then there's another part of me though. And maybe it's just that this is my, I was born on the line between Gen X and millennial. And my Gen X side is like, just kind of like, oh my gosh, wish people quit trying to capitalize off of the world's pain.
Yeah.
Just shut up. You know, but it's like, that's no, you know, so I'd like, but I'm an optimist at heart. And so it's like, I live in this tug of war between this. Like I have a song that I wrote about this whole time. And it's like, it's kind of depressing. Putting it out tomorrow. I'm just excited. I'm done with that. I'm putting it out.
Oh, I can't wait.
This song called These Days. And it's really just this kind of like introspective, just kind of like eerie kind of tune. But I'm like, you know what? Put it out. Just got to put stuff out.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
Dude, when you said born on the line of millennial and Gen X, that just sounds like the opening to your like one-man theater monologue.
Dude, I would love to do a one-man
born on the line
monologue.
Anyways,
born on the line.
Fast forward in the life of this song. I'll just wrap this up. Yeah. We recorded it all separately at our homes, which you can tell from the video. And that was a crazy process because it was the first time that we had done something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of even testing it out for future experiences with the church. It was sort of a guinea pig. And so it was a mess to try to like fuse together. Oh, Eric had a hard time with it. But at the same time, it almost added to just that collaborative effort of that song. The song was born in a collaboration, you know, and was sort of finished in a collaboration and then was even produced in collaboration. So there was no me sitting next to you while you're playing your part going, oh no, play it differently.
Yeah.
Like you played it at home. You recorded it and sent it and I didn't hear it until it was a part of the finished product, you know? So it's just cool to hear everyone's contribution to that, you know, kind of a quilt type of a song.
Yeah, so
quilt.
Yeah,
ooh,
tapestry.
It's a tapestry.
Yes, tapestry. Music. Quilt is like old lady tapestry. That's better. It's kind of more
a tapestry.
Artistic.
So, I mean, for those who may not know who comprise the arts team who work on a project like that, who are some of those people?
So, So each of the campus worship leaders, so it's Brad Loser over at over at Clear Lake, Courtney Ricketts over here at Eagle Bay, JJ Cole over East 96, then Tanner, myself, and then also Daniel Vinsel, who is, he's kind of like musician development. He used to only be at Eagle Bay, kind of the band leader here, and now he's been freed up to kind of help develop musicians across the board. Those, I think that's the circle. Whenever we start working on something, I'd say that's the circle. Now, all of us have musician friends that will sometimes maybe jump in and give feedback and stuff like that. We'll kind of shoot things around and all that kind of stuff. And so, and even I would say Kevin, who's like, he's the head of the arts team. He's just like a brilliant dude.
Yeah.
Like on lots of levels. And so he shoots in there sometimes. He'll jump and sit in on something. And he's just got like that word that you're like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
You know? And so he's also really helpful. So that's kind of, that's the circle.
Ted just makes it all work, dude. Like if we get stuck, Ted's just like, well, here's what we got to do to get it figured out. That guy is like the glue that holds us together. So
yeah.
Yeah. All right. So you guys have written a lot of songs personally as well, like hundreds of songs a piece over the years. Mm-hmm. I know, I would imagine that the process, the creative process for writing your own song looks different than whenever you do it together as a team when it's something for Clear Creek. So I want to hear from both of you. What is your creative process in writing a song personally? Whoever wants to go first.
You go first, man.
I'm going first. It depends on what it's for. I think that helps inform, you know, because sometimes like I go, I'll have just like a thematic idea or like for a song, or I'll be listening to a certain type of music, and that'll kind of bear fruit in my life. And some, I don't know, you know, just kind of, it kind of depends on what it's going to, like the end result, which is also kind of the thing I also hate about being a songwriter. I think that, you know, sometimes you can be writing with an end audience in mind, and it kind of messes up the process a little bit. Like if I know that I'm writing a worship song for Clear Creek Community Church, I'm going to write that song differently than if I'm just writing a song for my own, just for the heck of it,
for
my own reflection or my own, because I'm thinking through our language, our culture, and all that kind of stuff. So it's not necessarily bad, but like I think sometimes the end user gets in the way of the creative process a little bit. But typically I land on like a theme, or I'll hear a musical idea. And so like, it kind of depends on which ingredient gets thrown in the bucket first. And then I just kind of start to cook something from there. I've had songs that have started as like a riff, a guitar riff. The song Strength of My Heart, that was on the last album, that song started initially as this like thing JJ had, like just some, there's some like guitar thing he sent me, and then I was thinking about wanting to write a song about joy, and so then I just kind of threw both those things in the pot. We ended up ditching the guitar thing, and you know, it became something else, but you get all the stuff in the pot and it starts kind of cooking. So that's kind of like, I'll begin with something. It usually starts with like an idea or a theme or like a direction, and then I just kind of start putting the meat on that type of a structure. And kind of just see where it goes from there. You know, it just kind of depends. I write a lot of different genres of music too. Like I enjoy singer songwriter stuff. Like right now I'm trying to land all these different projects. Like a friend of mine and I have got an electronic singer songwriter kind of thing that we've been working on for too long, called Battlestar. And like, there's been some songs finished forever, and a lot of them are just like story songs about like space travel stuff like that. And
your Gen X side.
Yeah, like, there's a song called, the band's called Battlestar, and we have a song called Star Battle, so put that together. And then like some, like Glenna and my wife and I have been doing some singer songwriter stuff that has been really fun, you know, just something that she and I can just share doing together. There's been some, I've been DJing a lot. And so I've got like some rap hip hop stuff that I'm writing that I'm trying to land. And so it's just like, I love to creatively just branch into these different worlds, and you try to learn something about each of these different genres of music as you write. And, it just expands your palette a little bit, you know? So, I like to try to get things to a certain point before I share it. I think, would you agree that you do that too? Like you kind of get things to at least a certain level of where maybe like your idea is at least fleshed out enough to where someone could understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
Before you just kind of throw it out there, because otherwise I think people will start kind of messing with it. You're like, I'm not ready yet. You know, I'm not ready for you to do that yet. And so my process, I guess, is like, yeah, it begins with it's got to come from some creative spark, some inspiration, yeah. some piece, some lyric, some line. And then you just start running down the hill. Yeah. And then like, maybe it's a drum beat. And so you throw that in your computer and that beat, you throw it on loop. And you start singing stuff over that. You sing melodies over that loop. My phone is full of voice memos of total swill, just like the most ridiculous. I don't get embarrassed by anything, nothing. If you took my voice memos and posted them online, I would literally die. Like I would literally die. It's the most embarrassing thing in the world. I'm gonna find one. You go ahead and talk.
Yeah, if you can place.
Yeah, please give us an example.
I will pay. I will find something ridiculous.
Mine's probably the one on top right now. Like,
that's awesome. So yeah, Tanner, what's your process?
Yeah, my process. I just dropped my phone. Is very similar. I kind of the analogy I use is that of a seed. So that sort of inspiration or creative spark that he's talking about. That's a seed that falls into soil, and sometimes it like it totally germinates and spreads roots and grows up, and you've got a creative piece of beauty, you know, a song. And then sometimes it's like it fell on the rocky soil, or yeah. you know, it's not to steal Jesus' words on that, but I think he might have been onto something. And so for me, I've heard the analogy where a song can sort of flow down, like the beginnings of a song can sort of flow down two different rivers. So you have the rivers of the lyric or the content, and you have the river of music. And some people start with one or the other. I know for me, the songs that have where both have kind of come together, and in the beginning of the song, I have both a strong concept or at least an idea of a lyric and a musical concept or a hook or a feel or a chord or a progression or something. When those two things happen at the same time, that song has the propensity to grow and to flourish, I feel like, a lot faster. And not just faster, but just to be overall a more well-crafted song. But the process after that looks different with every song. So kind of like he said, it depends on the audience. It also just depends on the song, because what you have to fight as a songwriter is you have to fight trying to copy and paste certain methods or certain maps of the song, you know, we call them like a roadmap or whatever, from one song to another just because it worked. The phrase I love that I've heard from other songwriters is the song has to be king. Like the song has to make the calls. It has to make the decisions. And so just because one song, it went great going from, you know, verse chorus to the, and then jumping to a bridge early or having no turnaround in the middle or has a certain map or a certain flow or a certain tempo, that means nothing for the next song. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This next song, it might have a completely different, you know, lyrical content, completely different melodic kind of vibe, and it has to be its own entity, and you almost have to let it lead, you know, instead of trying to lead it. Another analogy that I've heard is sort of treating it like an archaeologist. You're uncovering something. You know, some of the greatest songs are ones that I feel like I'm digging and digging and digging, and then kunk. You know, I hit something. I'm like, this was here before me. This is something that's bigger than me just throwing some words together, you know, where it feels like something that that's a little bit more timeless than something I could have just, you know, put together. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that that song can't be written in 15 minutes. Like I've had songs that are written in literally 10, 15 minutes, like as enough time to sing it like three times basically. And then songs that have taken, you know, months or years or where I just am not satisfied with the parts. And I'm sort of, like we mentioned earlier, quilting it together.
And both are valuable.
Yeah. Like right now I'm working on a series of songs that are all based out of scripture, where they really all the lyrics are scripture. And my process through writing those songs has been different than pretty much any other song I've ever written, typically I'm sitting down with an instrument, a guitar or a piano or whatever, and I'm like kind of singing and playing and, you know, searching around. What I did this time was I was actually dealing with like tools, like a computer and microphone and, you know, MIDI and all this different stuff. And I was actually like copying and pasting and moving pieces around, almost crafting the song on a computer screen, which was completely different, but it kind of like gave birth to a new flavor, a new style that I've never been able to like produce before.
Which is super exciting.
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
So, sorry.
That is awesome.
You have to understand you might be used to podcasting with like teachers who like know how to like talk succinctly. We're artists. We are like trying to do our best. Like,
this is so
like
real doctor, not tell me ramble. About medicine. Yeah. Okay. Well.
Well, you guys are all like, you know, using metaphors and stuff. It's all just a very beautiful conversation. Right
you
now.
Feel the wind in your hair right now.
I did find. I found. So there's this song. I'm going to share voice memo. This is
vulnerability.
This is bearing it right now. This is it. Okay. So there's this song called Why Not. That's one of the Battlestar songs. And it's a song that's about these two people. You know, at the end of every movie when like the guy saves the girl, but like the world is like destroyed.
Yeah.
This is a song about like their conversation after everything's kind of over. So he's kind of like, so you want to go get some coffee, or like, what are we going to do now? Like, we don't even know each other. We're not even in love, but like, let's give this thing a shot. So that's the whole song. Okay. And so it's the song about like at the end of Jurassic Park and all the dinosaurs are dead. Now, like, what are Chris Pratt and the red-haired chick going to do? You know, so that things like that. So this is, I was like, man, this song needs a bridge. So I'm going to put this by the microphone. And this is not the lyrics. This is just literally the noises I made to represent what I thought it might sound like. What? Just me like going
gibberish.
This some melody, you know, just like, oh, this would be called. And then half the time my kids come in the room and I'm like, shut up, dad is busy,
I'm working over here.
That is not an isolated occurrence for probably any songwriter. Like, I have so many melodies with gibberish baby words, just like,
well, and then like, and this is also now it's like, and as a parent and an artist, you have to now, and we are not those kind of people who are we rented a studio in New Orleans down in the French Quarter, man, we're gonna go set up some gear for a couple weeks, or 2 months, we're gonna hash out our new album. No, like, I'm writing on the toilet because it's the only quiet place.
Yeah. In the shower, man. I'm writing in the shower during nap time.
You know, so it's like you have to compartmentalize creativity, and you could do an entire, not that anyone listening to this podcast would care about creativity and compartmentalize creativity, but like, that's the whole thing too. You know, you got to like be creative in spurts while you're driving down the road, while you're.
And so, whereas we're listening to Fighting Words, we know that some of it was written on the toilet. Is that what you're saying? Like, if we're singing that song,
sometimes that's a fight, you know. Yeah. So just like sort it out, man. Yeah. So I would say any song, you know, you don't want to know where it originated. You just want
to
hear.
Yeah, it's like I hate to keep coming back to analogies, but you know, you don't want to see the way that sausage is made, right? Yeah. You just want to eat the final product.
There you go. I like that.
All right. So you mentioned like, you know, real musicians, that they get to somehow hole away to like some cabin out in the woods or something.
Whoa. Real musicians.
I'm just joking. Yeah, like these
so,
professionals.
Ease up. Yeah. So, you know, they get the luxury of I guess, you know, holing up and writing an album. And I've heard sometimes musicians saying, you know, they don't want to listen to anything else because it messes up, you know, the melodies in their head and all that stuff. Do y'all find the same thing for you, where it's like, you know, listening to other music sort of messes with your creativity in that, or does it help that?
Absolutely not. For me, other music is one of the greatest inspirations towards writing music. And it's not just that I want to say like, oh, I'm going to rewrite that song, I'll just copy that song. But it is like, as a musician, music is one of the things that inspires me the most. So if I'm feeling a lack of creativity, putting on something that is like just illuminates beauty to me, I'm immediately sort of awakened to a creative nature that I maybe had fallen asleep to. So that is like today. I literally, an example today, I've been stuck with this song for weeks. I wrote it electronic, like you would have loved it, right?
Yeah.
It was right. Totally electronic. And then I was like, nah. So I rewrote it acoustic. Nah, I don't like that either. And so I was like, I mentioned to someone, yeah, I think I need to go like a Bon Iver route. It's an artist. I was like, I think I need to go that kind of a, just, and that's generic because even his music is completely different from when he started to when it is now. So there's not, it's not a copy and paste thing. So I started listening to it today, just like listening to Spotify shuffle Bon Iver songs. And I'm just like, okay, this is giving me like creative ideas just to go, where could, you know, it sort of opens up the horizon. Like, where could the song go? And if we're dumb enough to think that like we're writing songs with no influence from other music at all by not listening to music, that's like stupid, because everywhere you go, there's music playing. There's music that's probably stuck in your head from, you know, the all the years of your life of listening to music. Like, your mind doesn't just forget that stuff. And so everything influences music in some way. So might as well like let really good music influence other really good music.
Well, and that puts you in a space. You're putting your mind and your thoughts into an actual location sometimes. So I would answer it this way. This guy, his name is Vince Emmett. He does a lot of film scores and stuff like that. He lives in Nashville. I would say he's a mentor for me, Courtney, and JJ. We all have gotten to go out to his place in second Franklin, Tennessee, and we got to spend a week there at this artist camp thing. I mean, this was decades ago for me. I am ancient when I was on a mountain with a beard. But one of the things that he said that stuck with me, and I totally know it's true, he said, everybody only writes one song, and you spend the rest of your life rewriting that song. And what that means is that at some point, the way that I naturally write a melody, the way I naturally think about music is intrinsic to me as my DNA. The way that Tanner does, the way that Courtney does, JJ, all of us have this natural bent. And so if I isolate myself and continue to try to write music, I'm going to literally write the same thing. Yeah. If I don't get out and if you don't put yourself by listening to new music and new things, if you don't put yourself in watching new films, stuff like that.
Reading books. Yeah.
If you don't ingest other art, then you are going to continue to write the same song. And so sometimes I think as a musician, as an artist, you can get prideful and think you have enough of your own. You don't need anything else. And so if you don't, you're going to continue to write that same song. So I love to write a song, start a song, and it is Eric's song. And I love to toss it to one of these guys and go, okay, like there's a song we did for Mix Weekend called Miss This. I started writing the song, and then I gave it to Courtney. I said, Courtney, I want you to listen to this song, and I want you to re-record it, send it back to me. Just listen to it twice, and then here's the lyrics. Send these melodies back to me, because I know that her natural bent is going to already change it to be a mixture of my song and her song. And I really love how my song and her song go together. It just has borne good fruit over the years. And so, again, so now that song ended up being this cool mix of my song and her song, you know. And so, and then other people then got involved too. Now they sprinkle theirs in there too. And so it's like, and so what came out was a thing that's way better than what if I'd isolated it into myself. So
yeah, I think that's what's so important about collaboration. And just thinking about how each person, each creative has, like you said, their own song, that's both a negative in the sense of we can't sort of necessarily get past that, but it's also a positive in the sense of God has uniquely placed in each person a voice, not just like a voice, maybe you don't have a good singing voice or whatever, but he's uniquely placed in each person a voice, a style, a melody, if you will. And when humanity comes together and works out songs together and has conversations together and writes things together, like, that's one of the things that I think brings true beauty into culture. And for somebody to say, well, I don't like the songs that I write, or I don't like pieces that I write, or I don't like when I write, try to write a book, I don't like what's coming out. And so I'm just not going to produce anything. I'm not going to release anything. Is basically saying, hey, the voice, the melody that you gave me, God, is even though you have placed it in me to contribute it back to for the good of culture and for the good of humanity, I'm not going to. I'm going to bury that, actually. I'm going to keep it underground and keep it safe there, as opposed to putting it out there and sort of putting it at risk. And maybe it is risk, and it's vulnerable. It's hard to do. Like, yeah. I'm learning how to co-write. I'm coming from years of basically not co-writing. Mm-hmm. So now to step into a team like that is really, really hard. But I'm seeing the beauty of what comes out of that, of the beauty of that collaboration. So I just would say, like, to any listener who has different elements of creativity, if they're a photographer, if they like dance or theater or whatever, God has uniquely given you a sense of creativity to release that into the world for ultimately the purpose of the gospel being illuminated more clearly. And so finding ways to do that is extremely important, especially doing it with other people.
So there's a difference between a song that is written to be sung corporately in a worship service and a song that is meant to be, I guess, listened to on their own however. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to keep in mind when you're writing a song that is meant to be sung corporately for the church?
Dude, that's a way harder thing.
It's so hard.
It's a very difficult thing. You got to think about it. Is a little bit like riding with like weights on you, because you got to think about you got to think through the consumability of your average Joe who's coming to church. Because the chief end of writing a congregational song is that we want people to be able to use this song personally to express this thing to God. So it's not going to probably have it's not going to have a huge vocal range. It's got to be lyrically something that makes sense and is approachable. And then, you know, there's like, what are all these things? There's always lyrically understandable.
Yeah. It has to be singable. It has to like theologically be sound. It has to, you know, you really want to, take command of a certain type of even emotional experience. So if you want this song to sit in a certain place that's more reflective, it needs to like kind of maintain that. If you want it to be more anthemic, it needs to maintain that. And so, there are all these different elements that come into play. And mm-hmm. I mean, with songwriting, there's always certain limitations you really want to put on yourself so that the end product becomes the best that it can be. But with songwriting for the church, those limitations are increased, and they're just more important. It's like writing a sermon, you know, you want to make sure what you have to say to people as you explain and expound on God's word is going to be helpful and truthful. Whereas sometimes if I'm just writing a song for myself, like, it doesn't have to be truthful. Like a lament, if you will, oftentimes laments are like not necessarily truthful, but it's how I feel, you know? And so it's just an expression of how you feel. But with a song that is for the church, I've heard, I think it was Jenny Lee Riddle that said that writing a song is, or like writing songs for the church is like putting prayers on the lips of the bride. And so when you write a song for the church, you have to be conscientious of that, mindful of that.
Because you're outfitting a known army with what you're doing. You know, you're feeding your family. You know, like, especially when we write for Clear Creek Community Church, it's when I'm writing a worship song for Clear Creek Community Church, that even is different than writing a worship song for the church as a whole, because we have the advantage of knowing our culture. We have the advantage of knowing that we were a church for the unchurched, you know? And so we even write differently. There's certain words and even metaphors that we shy away from because we know that in our context, this is what we want to say, you know? And so, and that's not, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's definitely, it's hard.
I think it could seem like if somebody's listening to this, they might say like, well, that seems fake then, or that just seems forced or whatever. And it's, I mean, it's no more than anything else you want to communicate to someone. You, when you communicate something to someone, you want to carefully consider that. You want to craft it in such a way that it makes the most sense, is the most impactful, carries the most weight. And so really, it's a, the effort of writing a song for the church is one that we want to wear that weight. We want to carry that burden respectfully. We want to carry it, what's the word I'm looking for? Just... we want to be responsible with that, you know, calling that God's placed on us. And I do think it's the call, it is our, a calling for us to write songs for the church.
What's kind of beautiful about for that for us, we're not a big deal.
Yeah.
we're not Bethel or Hillsong or Elevation they probably on some level feel some pressure to write songs for like millions.
Globally, yeah.
We don't. I mean, I don't feel the pressure. I mean, we would love for our songs to serve people outside of just Clear Creek Community Church. But when we put a song out, like we're serving Clear Creek Community Church, you know, and like that is our first initial audience. And for however it would then bless people past that, awesome. But, you know, so that's the kind of like the pressure is off a little bit too, you know, so there's a flip side to that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't really appreciated the responsibility that you bear in that whenever you're writing a song like that, you're not just expressing your own emotion, you're expressing my emotion and other people's. I mean, you're writing a song that I'm going to sing, and you have to think about how I feel and what I believe and mix that all together with this huge group of people. And you know, like you said, you're putting something on the lips of all these people. You're helping us to express our beliefs and our hopes in Jesus, and not just your own. And
it's honestly, it's hard work, but the reward of that, like when a room of people, and prayerfully can happen again soon, come together and sing something that you had the blessing, the privilege of getting to partner with others and crafting the song, and now the whole church is using that, as I mentioned before, as a vehicle, you know, to sort of get inside the song and express themselves and communicate and spend time with God. And now you're doing it collectively with the body in a room. It's like there's nothing like that.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially if the creative process is done in community like that. Like you can't even take credit for it. It's like that came from the Spirit of God moving in all these people. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it came from the community that God has created. It's being sung by this community that God has created. And that's awesome.
And, and also that too then helps me personally to be zealous for other people to hear it, because I don't feel like it's self-promoting. It's like, no, we did this for us. I want every one of our people to hear it, consume it, you know, understand it, you know, hear about it, like how did it even come together? And, you know, you're talking about, there are people's faces when I think about writing for a church. There's like this, I don't know, for some reason, there's a handful of people that their faces come to mind. And maybe it's just, they're the people that I've seen singing on a Sunday or a Wednesday.
Oh, that's cool.
And their faces come to mind. And I think, can I see this person singing this song? And maybe, I don't think that's too squeltering or whatever. I don't think that holds me back. I think that helps me aim more true, you know, at who we are, you know, and so that's helpful. I would add one little thing to that. Maybe if you're listening and you're not musical, you're not an artist, you're not a creative, and you're like, so, you know, if you've made it this far in this podcast and you're none of those things,
kudos to you.
Bravo.
Thanks for
I can't
being
believe
interested.
You're still listening. Should have put this at the front. The best thing you can do, I hesitate to use this word, but be a fan. Like, be a consumer of these things. Like, just consume art. If people wrote a song, listen to the song.
Yeah.
you know, go like the song, share the song. Like that kind of thing allows encouragement for people who do write stuff to feel valued on some level, you know, because we can say all day, oh, we just wrote this to write it, man, and you're just going to let Jesus handle it. Like, whatever. Won't be able to hear it. If I'm like, dude, no one listened to that song. Ugh, you know, and maybe the one person that needed to hear it heard it. But if we believe that God is in it and that God pushed us, we're not saying this is like inspired Holy Spirit, like, you know, canon of the Bible, nothing like that. But we believe that God is in it and that God wants to use these tools to further his kingdom. Then maybe as a non-artist, your job is to receive it, you know? And like, and I try to, as an artist, even be a fan of other artists. We had some friends that moved to Nashville to try to make it in music, and they moved back because they're like, there's no fans in Nashville. Everyone's a musician and artist.
Yeah.
So what was the point? It was like everything was white noise, and they wanted to go back to somewhere where people wanted to hear something, you know? And so that's always my prayer for anything I create, even if it's some asinine, dumb song. I hope someone smiles, you know? I hope it brings joy to somebody, you know, or like just whatever, you know?
Yeah. I think that really what that is stewardship. When you've been entrusted with, you know, hearing something or experiencing a piece of art or reading something or whatever, that's now been put in your possession. And what will you do with that? You know, how can you share that with someone else? To me, thinking about that, one of my favorite stories in the Bible is when, you know, the woman comes and anoints Jesus' feet, and it's this elaborate sacrificial act of breaking this, you know, jar of costly perfume. And everyone's indignant and says, oh, it's wasteful, you know, especially Judas. Oh, it's so wasteful. And then Jesus turns and says, hey, leave her alone. What she did, and he uses the word, is beautiful to me. And wherever the gospel is preached, that this act will be told in accordance with it. And it might have been wasteful to everybody in the room and seemed like it wasn't productive or worth something. And much of creativity is songs and books. A lot of people view them as sort of extra. They're non-essential, if you will, to work and responsibility and different things like that that are more maybe quote-unquote productive. And yet, it is those sacrificial, wasteful acts of sacrifice of what Jesus would call beauty that help people understand why the gospel is so important. That God would give his son in a wasteful, sacrificial act of beauty for all of humanity. And so a song, a poem, a book, a painting, you know, you can hear it, you can take it in, you can stream it, and then just kind of say, I'm not going to do anything with that. Or you can tell a friend about it. You can, you know, take a picture of it. You can, you know, share it. You can use it in a conversation, whatever it is. And you're now helping to steward that beauty to the rest of the world, you know?
So where can people find Fighting Words? Where can they like it and they share it? I know it's in multiple different places, but
it's kind of everywhere. It's on anywhere you get music, it's out there. So if you go look for Clear Creek Community Church, I mean, you can find
iTunes,
Spotify, Amazon, on YouTube,
on Amazon Music.
On Amazon Music.
Yeah, and then we
you
have
you can
it
just
on.
Go ask your Alexa right now.
Oh, yeah.
And Alexa.
There's a music video you can view on those platforms, Facebook and YouTube and stuff like that, too.
So it's even on the gram.
We get on clearcreekresources.org as well. All right, last question for you guys. So as musicians, I'd imagine that you have an answer for this, so I'm kind of surprising you with the question. But if you could get up on stage, if you were called up on stage at any concert to play a song, what band would be calling you up on stage and what song would you be singing?
I feel like I know yours. Should we guess for each other?
I'm so pigeonholed.
It'd be more fun to guess for each other.
Okay, you can guess.
I'm between two.
Okay. For you personally?
No, I'm between two for you.
Okay.
I'm guessing yours.
Okay.
I'm between U2 and Bon Jovi.
Well, yeah, I think both of those would be pretty awesome.
But
I'd probably say U2.
Okay, but were those your top two?
I don't know if they're my top.
What's your number one?
Bon Jovi was more like, as a kid, you know, that was like my favorite band. I don't think that Sorry, John, if you're listening.
If like 65-year-old John,
if you're listening, John, right now to this podcast,
I think he listens.
So. He probably does. I'm sure he does. Out in Jersey,
he's tuning in.
I don't know that I've loved it as a progression of all things, but you too. I think if Bono was just like, get up here, let's do this. And then we sang the song "Bad." Mm. That would be it. I mean, I've been very close in concert before, and he and I have locked eyes during "Where the Streets Have No Name."
Ooh,
we flew to Philadelphia. Coming up next,
and I was all like,
"You want me to do this?"
No, at that point, I think my heart exploded, and I didn't know what to do myself.
Yes,
I remember we went and saw them in Philadelphia. I flew up there to go see the "How to Dismantle Atomic Bomb" tour, and Bono comes up out of the we're really close to the stage, and he comes up out of the stage, and we didn't expect it. And me and Glenna look over there, and we're both like crying like a couple of Japanese girls at a Michael Jackson concert. I mean, we are just like,
that's a Gen X reference for those of you who are.
Yeah. No, we're both just like bawling our eyes out. I was like, why are we crying? Yeah, but so if I could get up and sing "Bad" with you two, probably circa like 1987 also. Like, I'd want to do it then.
Yeah, not now.
Now would be great too.
Less great.
But that would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. You guess for me.
Yeah.
Would it be Colony House? Would that be the band you'd want to go
I do
with?
Love Colony House, but I think it would be Switchfoot.
Yeah, that's pretty classic.
All-time fave, man. And I have had a moment, since you're going to share your moment, I'll share mine. A couple years ago, I saw Colony House. I think it was both of them. Anyways, I saw Switchfoot at the backyard at Common Grounds in Waco.
Oh, great place.
And randomly, you know, because they're doing big tours and of big venues, but they're playing in this backyard. And when I found out they were going to be there, like, yes, took a bunch of guys, road tripped up there. And it started to rain a little while we were waiting. We're like, oh man, I hope this thing doesn't get rained out. Clouds clear as they're singing the song "Stars." The stars begin to come out.
Dude,
and John Foreman comes off the stage. We're wearing the same t-shirt. And he wraps his arm around me. And we start singing together in the like in the crowd. There's a picture of it.
Oh my gosh!
I'll show you a picture later. Utter joy on my face. So it sort of already happened, I guess. But yeah, it was a beautiful.
That is pretty cool.
That was cool.
That's a cool venue too, man. Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. All right, guys. Thanks for being on the podcast today. It was good chatting with you.
Yeah, it was fun. thanks for doing this, man. I feel like this
is
like
inviting me. Yeah,
very different than our normal fare.
I got a little giddy when I saw your email. I was like, "Oh, Ryan wants me to come to a podcast."
I know. Sweet. Well, I love. I mean, I've talked to both of you guys about writing songs in the past. So yeah. I mean, I've always been inspired by those conversations. I thought, man, other people should hear this. They should know the process and just the ingenious that goes into it. So it was good.
About ingenious, but we do what we can. After we get off this podcast, we'll write a song with you, Ryan. We'll write your first rap song to go on your mixtape.
That would be awesome.
Hey, you can collab on my new rap album. Let's do this. Yeah. Let's do it, man.
Awesome. I need to have a stage name.
We'll work on that too. That's where you got to start. There's actually I'm sure you can go on Google, make me a rap name, and
there is a Wu-Tang name generator. That's how Childish Gambino got his stage.
Is it serious?
That makes so much sense.
That is so.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Awesome. That makes me happy.
Awesome. Well, all right. For those of you who are listening, thanks for checking out the Clear Creek Resources podcast. Hope our conversation just gave you some greater insight into what goes into writing a song, just personally, but also the songs that we sing together as a church family. If you haven't yet, make sure that you subscribe to the Clear Creek Resources podcast wherever you listen so you don't miss any of our weekly episodes. Also, I'll put some links to some of the things that we mentioned today, some of their songs and albums that the artist team has created in the description of this podcast episode at clearcreekresources.org. We can also check out, in addition to the music, articles, videos, books, and sermon. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. I'm Ryan Layton. We will see you next time.